Well, Corey, if you look at the data for the of GDP for the year up until June 2020, when you look at the agricultural output, for up to June 2019, so that first half of the year of 2019, it was about $53.6 million. For this year, agricultural output was $55.6 million. So it shows you that agriculture is an industry that can be sustainable even in the midst of one of the greatest shocks that we have had. Now, could you imagine if agriculture was a significantly higher percentage of the overall economy, then we'll be able to weather these storms a lot better. Now, I think it's really important for us to consider how can we incentivize the greater use of technology to help us improve our agricultural efficiency. Now, just last week, I was hearing that in the United Arab Emirates, they are now starting to grow agriculture on desert land using technology out of Holland. That's just to show you how technology is advancing the advent of agriculture in places where you wouldn't think that agriculture could happen. We are here in Barbados, and I think that we should be doing a lot more. And actually, excellent news that the government has decided to provide more incentives and support for agriculture. Now, finally, on this point, I want to say to your callers as well that we are Caribbean people. And the Prime Minister has been the greatest advocate for this. I think we have to also see our market, our natural market, as being all of the Caribbean. And when we start developing our agricultural produce, we can say, okay, I can do some things in Barbados, but then there are other places within the Caribbean that has a lot more agricultural land. Can we encourage Barbadian capital to go down there and even Barbadian labor to go down there and start working the land there? And you know, we start to generate this whole, I guess, virtuous circle, as it were, with respect to food security at a Caribbean level. So I just want to say, yes, the agriculture is absolutely important for us, but we need to grow it and let it become a much more important part of our economy, because the statistics shows that even in the midst of this great recession, it has actually held up very, very well. And we can still look at agriculture not only within the confines of Barbados, but also across the Caribbean. Grenada, Suriname, Belize, all of these places provide us with significant opportunities. And so that's just also coming back to a point where we have to really look beyond our borders to say, okay, what can this regional integration movement bring for us as well? If Barbadian labor can go and work anywhere and then repatriate profits back to Barbados and remittances, you know, there, I think now is the time for us to think fully outside of the box and to see how we can now drive the Barbadian economy forward, not only through domestic investment, but how we are able to utilize our resources across this entire Caribbean.
For me, I just want to add my point on it as someone who's had a toe in agriculture for a while. I agree with a lot of what you guys said. I have a different perspective on some of the things you said, but I'm going to come back to the lines. I'm just going to say this is I think we need to work on the mindsets because traveling and getting involved in agriculture, investing heavily in agriculture has always been an issue. I think that the media has a lot to do with it because the media reports a lot of negative things in agriculture. As I always say, this dog eat this sheep, this part get flat out, this gluts. You hear about that, but you never see the successful farmers. They are the best kept secrets. The other thing is the it said that a lot of incentives are in agriculture, and that is so to some extent. But a lot of the incentives on the books, when you try to actually, you know, get access to them, some you're told they were never, ever, ever implemented. They're put on the books. I say for sure. Other people may agree, knowing what's actually happening. And then when you look at the investment and the lip service paid to agriculture over the last few decades, compared to the word the investment, when you need equipment, you can't get equipment. Equipment is always down. There's no seriousness. There's an inertia within the system of implementing agriculture. Now, in fairness to the government, they're in 2 years, and I'm talking a lot more over the last 20 years. But it must be said that if we are serious about agriculture, we cannot just pay lip service. We cannot only look at comments. We have to look at what has been implemented. But I do believe that when you look at the whole idea of economies of scale and competing with countries like Brazil and so on, we can see why importers would want to import, or hoteliers would import 70% of what they use, because it looks prettier, is more acceptable and so on. I think when we talk about agriculture in this country, we have to be very innovative and very creative. We have to look at packaging, we got to look at marketing, we got to sell the story of our soil and our various indigenous animals and flora and fauna, so to speak. That has always been my strong passion when I think about agriculture, and not brought back agriculture that people tend to run away from. But that's just my little take, just to stimulate any more discussion that we have on this topic.
Could I say something there, Corey?
For sure.
I think you raise a very important point around why we seem to import a lot of agricultural produce, when in fact I think we can do it quite well here in the Caribbean. And I think a lot of education has to happen with respect to distributors, the distributional channels. Companies that are engaged in distribution, it's quite easy for them to perhaps have contracts with suppliers out of Miami or even other countries. And it becomes very easy for them to bring in these imports, because those countries have also developed systems whereby they have the standards, the quality of standards, but they also have the logistics in place that makes it easy for their produce to be exported to places like a Barbadian market. This is where I believe we really need to make concerted effort in improving our logistics, but also improving the quality standards. I think that when persons go into agriculture, they must understand that they have to produce goods at a high quality, but at a good frequency, so that when distributors come to buy a certain quantity, they know that they are getting what they have actually asked for. And in addition to that, I think we have to improve our overall logistics, ensuring that when I produce something on my farm, let's say in the central of the country, and I need to get that to the supermarkets on the West Coast or to the hotels on the West Coast, that can happen quite easily. So there's a lot of education that has to happen. But just to come back to another point, I think that there are a lot of young people now who are interested in agriculture, because all of a sudden now, Corey, agriculture is becoming quite sexy because of the advent and the use of technology in agriculture. And many people are sort of keeping under the radar, but there are a lot of young folks and entrepreneurs out there, not only in Barbados, but across the region, who are doing some really exciting things. And I think it's only a matter of time before we start to hear about them. And, you know, one thing I think we have to understand is that our foods that we produce are quite nutritionally good. You know, there's a big movement towards the use of gluten-free products. I am often very happy when I go to the supermarket to see, for example, breadfruit flour, cassava flour, all sorts of things being produced here in Barbados. And you are right, it's time that the media starts shining a light on some of these domestic agriculture and manufacturing products that are being done, so that young people can see for themselves that this is a viable entity. It's something that we can go into. And maybe it's also time that we start to include some more information and education in our curricula around agriculture, around agri-tech, for example, so that people can see that this is a viable way for gaining employment and entrepreneurial activity. Because ultimately, we also need an educational curriculum that satisfies where we want our countries to go. If we are saying that agriculture is important for food security, then our education curriculum must also reflect that as well.
Correct. Well done. Let's go by the telephone lines. Good morning and welcome. You're on the air.
Good morning, Corey.
Hi, morning.
There are two issues I would like to raise today. Good morning to your guests. During the tenure of the late Prime Minister Owen Arthur, calls were being made for the restructuring of the economy. Don't you think now is the ideal time that we should undertake that?
Dr. Kevin Greenidge would tell you that they were doing that for the last 2 years.
All right. The second issue. Two or so weeks ago, a caller made the point that the only part of the $2.1 billion in reserves that are not borrowed is the amount of money left by the last administration. Now, seeing that we are earning very little foreign exchange, don't you think that we are going to have to repay these loans out of the same reserves?
That's a question for the guests. So who's going to take that one?
Getting some feedback here.
You heard the question?
Not clearly. Not the last part clearly. Could you just repeat it, please?
Mm-hmm. Caller, could you repeat the question?
I said a caller a few weeks ago made the statement, okay, that the only part of the $2.1 billion that is not borrowed is the amount left by the last administration. And seeing that we are earning very little or no foreign exchange, aren't we going to have to repay these loans out of the same reserve?
Yeah, thanks. I can answer your question. Corey, let me remind me to say something about agriculture when I finish.
No problem.
So, Carl, thanks for your question and the concern. Now, you know, there's nothing really wrong with borrowing. The problem wrong with borrowing is if you borrow, you can't repay. We all got to borrow. It's a smart sense to borrow to do things, even at our personal level. But it's the ability to repay when you borrow. So the difference is when you get international, what we call concessional loans, loans at 2% and 3%, and then you take that money and put it in something that grows the economy, that it gives you even a larger return that makes economic. And that's what we are focusing on doing. You get financing that cheap, and you use it to build infrastructure and do things that will help you repair. Now, at 2 point, and I don't have to show you, at $2.1 billion in reserves, we have projected that when the we start to repair, most of these loans are going to start hitting around 2028. We will have 6 to 7 times more reserves than we require to pay in all government debt service. So there's no concern about borrowing to, and being able to repay. In fact, before any borrowing takes place, over the last 2 years, before any borrowing takes place, we do an analysis to compare what we're doing for, what borrowing for, where is it going, and the ability to repay. Can we accommodate it under minor assumptions? So, because we don't want to return to a place where our debt is at those high, crazy levels. So, good question, but rest assured, this is something that the economic team and the government keeps in mind at every point along the way. Corey, if you let me continue now to talk to me. You are asked some of the things. I just want the previous callers to know that, and they start to look at some of these stuff here. The actual space in cultivation has increased. Cultivation space have increased by 16% between January and June this year. More lands are put in cultivation. And then the ministry, through BADMC, has made $1 million in inputs available to small farmers now, making it possible for them to get access to all the inputs needed to increase their produce. And this is in every area outside the sugar. That's $1 million at BMC for help them through this. And this is even during the COVID environment. And also cultivation services in terms of information and knowing how to do things, et cetera, is being provided through BMC, BA. The ADMC, BMC, the soil conservation, et cetera, to again help the small farmers to prepare their lands and everything in order to increase production. Another thing, cabinet also agreed to water harvesting reservoirs in River, St. Philip, Spring Hall, land lease project, Bach Plantation years, and that is something that will come on board in this week, but cabinet has agreed to that. And that will ensure that year-round supply of water to farmers, especially during the drought and drought periods. I say all of this to say that agriculture is definitely, as I say, a main pillar of the economic recovery and transformation, is a main pillar of food security, and is front and center of what we are doing.
Okay, excellent. Okay, you're listening to Brass Tax Sunday, brought to you the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful Permaclad U-Panel and R-Panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joins from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices. Delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas, 425-2000, or Lowlands Christ Church, 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back. Let's go right to the telephone lines and say good afternoon and welcome. You're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. Any government policy that's supposed to represent re-engineering, and, you know, you guys spoke about re-engineering and transformative. I love that word, transformative. All those kinds of policies require significant government input. The kind of private sector we have in Barbados cannot be relied upon to be part of that thing in any real way. Even the banks, which require moral suasion to make simple little decisions like interest rates and stuff, do not respond to what government would like to have them do. In fact, the banks have become so restrictive now, that you can't even get a new credit card. They got to put money up. They give you no credit because they realize, oh, this is the situation that we are in. Banks are the most conservative of all people. This concept about, oh, you know, it's easier for retailers to bring in stuff from overseas, foodstuffs and things, as opposed to dealing with local farmers, is a lot of nonsense. Right now, the whole concept of a peg means nothing. These economists are not going to admit that. The peg is a bogus convenience. It should really be related to the availability of U.S. money through earning. If you ain't earning it, you really shouldn't be spending it. So if the retailers are going to come to you and say, well, it's cheap to bring this thing from overseas, the government should be saying, absolutely not. Well, I ain't got no money to give you to go and spend overseas. Use the local people. That is distinct government policy. It has to be in there. Transformative requires government support big time. Nobody, not a foolish private sector. I heard my man, Dr. Gwynish, talk about, oh, the road has now been cleared. This is before the COVID started. The road is now clear for the private sector to utilize whatever Barbadians they are to bring skills to the marketplace and make this place work. These people don't operate like that there. The banks don't even lend hotels, far less manufacturers. They don't do it. They don't get involved in productive enterprise, period. It has to be full-scale government employment, saying involvement, saying either you will or you will not. And that's one. The other thing is very simple. You understand? That's one thing. So I completely disagree with what those guys are saying with regards to the response from the private sector and the finance institutions. They're only dreaming. They're pie in the sky. The second thing is, oh, I told Dennis I can be very well behaved. second thing is, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, Mr. Gwynish don't impress me that much, man. He's not pretty. The second thing is, he's my friend. The second thing is the whole concept of, you know, I just collect rent. I got a couple tenants, luckily enough. And I also pay rent. The thing is, my landlord said to me, you know, my man, we are in this together. You're going to pay the rent to me for the next 2 or 3 months. I, in turn, said to my tenants, you know, we are in this together. You don't have to pay me rent for the next 2 or 3 months. When I started back paying rent to my landlord, it was like a reduced amount because he didn't want to kill me. And when I, in turn, started charging my tenants rent, it was a reduced amount because we are all in this together. In fact, my landlord is Ansel McCall. That's a big one. So, you know, we are all in this together. I get it. So I'm saying to the government of Barbados now, when they earn enough foreign exchange, the economy has reduced by, 30% unemployment and all kinds of things. You ain't got no revenue base to tax people. And we are in this together. I don't see the sacrifices being made on the side of government. I'm not saying send home people, but if the taxation base has been reduced by 40-30% and going further, then therefore there should be significant attempts at reducing the way the monies that are collected are spent. You know, the taxation, therefore...
Caller, can I kind of moderate a discussion between you and the economist here? I know you usually would do a hot rant, but I want to know if we could do it in gear. So you drop a point, I want to get a response from them. So let's bring in Dr. Greenwich now in terms of responding what he would have said thus far. So you don't go anywhere, caller. You stay right there. Dr. Greenwich.
I'm struggling to get the question though because
he would have made a number of comments.
Said that he's my friend, and I never heard about. He said he's not pretty, so he's very good. That's one thing I've never heard about myself. But it was I'm not sure. I was trying to understand the gentleman's main point. Maybe I'm sorry.
Can I repeat it then?
Sure. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, partner, buddy.
EPEG is a convenience that should not be recognized anymore. And the reality is that the U.S. dollar is very difficult to come by. So the notion that people could go overseas and buy things cheaper than they can be bought locally should be thrown out the door. It should be forcing self-sufficiency. Buy local, because the U.S. dollar is just not available anymore.
All right, that pause, caller. Let's respond to the peg issue.
So, whether it's a peg, a fixed exchange rate we talk about, or a floating rate like Jamaica, or a managed float rate you actually try to prop it up like Trinidad, that really don't matter, you know. What matters is the credibility person have in the exchange system you have. And the only way to have credibility is to have a stock of reserves to protect whatever you're going to exchange at. So it really don't matter. What we have tried to do is build back confidence in the Barbados dollar and in the exchange, whether it fits or floating. We have done that through building the reserves program. I agree with you. I mean, nobody is going to say whether you want to go overseas or Spain or people or not. Again, that's personal decisions. I'm not into telling people how to where to spend the money. But I agree with you, we need to provide an environment where firms are incentivized to spend locally. Which means better quality product available to people. So I have no problem with what you say, partner.
Mm-hmm. But I have a problem with what you're saying, because you're leaving it up to the private sector and they're not going to respond that way. Like, you don't live out here no more, you know. Like, you lost capture Barbados. They don't respond that way.
Listen. What to do. I ain't going to WhatsApp you my number offline. We can have a conversation about
my no, personal. No, but I got to show you.
But here's the thing.
All right, let me intervene here, because I want to make this as educational as possible. Carly, I want you to move on to the next point you were making.
Yeah, the second one had everything to do with the cost of I'm not saying the size. I don't want nobody staying home. I'm just talking about the cost of government in response to the reduced revenue base. You're not earning from, because people have gone home, they can't earn income tax and stuff. People finding difficulty in paying property tax because the property isn't making the money. So, you know, the taxation base is reduced, but yet you haven't reduced the cost of government. Why is that? Why can it easily be done?
So when you refer to the cost of government, I am assuming you're talking about full government, which include public sector workers and things like that, right?
Yeah, that's all that's too.
That we're talking about. But listen, we all have different approaches to economics.
Dr. Village, do we pay your salary or does the AMF pay your salary?
My man, you want me to buy your drink? Don't ask me how much money I got you. Man, you don't really want coffee. I love it, not bargain. I may wear a suit and tie, but I don't roll, so. Let me ask the question you ask.
Sorry, here's
the question you ask. There are different ways to adjusting economically to a shock. Yes, we had a severe shock. And we had when the program began, we had the worst position we could have had. Some people would have said, send to home 10,000, 15,000 public workers and fix the problem. We chose a different approach. We chose to let the capital, through debt restructuring, and other forms, take the hit. And let me finish a minute, Skipper. Give me a chance. You have your turn. Labor take the minimal hit. And that is how we have done it. Even through COVID, when the government came up with the household mitigation program, and where you're putting doubling households by 40%, etc. All of this was to protect public. It's no sense saying one people.
I agree.
Instead of worrying about the cost of government is one part of the equation, my brother. The other part of the equation is productivity and earnings and growing. It is more effective and sustainable to grow the economy by keeping people employed, by giving them opportunities to earn money and giving opportunities to them, then cutting people and saying, well, people thought you're reducing costs. My grandma would say you're cutting your nose to spoil your features.
No, right.
So we may have two different approaches about economics, and I'm not going to fight up you on yours. What to say is that my preferred approach is to take care of people. Not saying want a body, but give a man a fish, an ability to fish, and earn his living. And that's
the approach. If you didn't say anything different, you've decided...
But then wait, time will the cost of government for...
I'm the cost of government, not the size. We ain't sending home nobody, but you've said...
No, how are you going to reduce... So we have tackled costs through efficiencies. A number of state-owned enterprises has been restructured.
Yeah.
In order to reduce the cost. They are no longer a liability and a drain on the public purse.
Well, I don't you know what to what extent that is true, but...
Stop it. Be real. You can look and you can see the evidence. Huh?
But
as Dr. Justin just told you, it is not that It is not that your job is done, you know. COVID halted us. We got to get back to the business of structuring the public sector tool, making it more efficient, lean, more financially fit for purpose. COVID has
Dr. Glazer, get the words, you know, I get the words. They do. That's not impressive enough. But, you know, you got to make decisions that are stringent enough. No, no, because you would have responded in a roundabout way with this boss thing, which is a deferred payment. You're borrowing money from the public service to pay them back again after you hope things come back. I know for a fact, these are the facts, that the cruise ships will be starting at earliest next year, November. You're talking about a whole year and a good few months. Earliest November next year. Hotels probably will even start up by summer next year because they don't even deal with summer. So truth be told, you're talking about maybe into the year after before you start earning something. That means you have a very short period of time before the next general election. Anyhow, I don't know how the hell they can make promises about paying back public servants then. But, you know, I'm not going to criticize your boss. I don't particularly like it, but this is not the place to criticize it. I admit that. But the point is, you have a constitutional majority. All that was needed to be done was to cut the public servant salaries. But they will understand.
Hold on a minute. You can't say things and don't give me a chance to respond. Offers the public, every public worker opportunity to serve is optional. If you didn't want to put down $100 or $200 a month, that was your prerogative. You didn't have to. But if you didn't afford to put it down, hey.
But you don't respond to comments. You respond to say,
Skipper, give me a chance now. If you could afford to put it down, you put it down, and people have benefited you, the statistics on the boss. It's repayable, or at the end, government will start repairing 4 years from today. That gives us sufficient time, and we have already built into the economic analysis the repayment period. So, and I agree with you, nobody knows when cruise going to come back. Nobody knows when tourism will come back. But as we've been saying, we have buffers. We're putting systems in place and policies to keep people at least alive and working and earning something.
You might have to shift your focus. You don't respond
there. But ask me a specific question then.
Mm-hmm. I did twice. And you answered in different ways, two different questions, and you answered completely.
Give me one more thing. Hit me one more time.
Let me be direct. There would have been nothing wrong with asking the public servants to take a cut. That has been done before in the past. And the government, the reserves should reserve that right in times of need to have the public service take a little sacrifice. You know,
Let me ask you directly. You agree with me, Carla, you agree with me that is an option, right?
What they said was an option?
Just agree with me that asking public sector workers to cut salary is an economic option, correct?
Yeah, but you know, no.
At the same time, you must agree to that government have the right to choose what option it chose. And we felt that was not the way we want to go. I'm not saying you were wrong. In the past, people did it. I'm just saying government chose not to go that route because it felt it was not the option it wanted. And government has the right to do that.
But you need a lasting option. That would have been a lasting option because it means
you knew, Normie, ain't good enough to tell which was last. We got to keep modifying policies and putting them in place as the situation unfolds.
Our
best to preserve.
All right, Carla and Kevin, let Justin come in. He wants to come in. Justin?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. I just want to say something to the caller and to back up what Kevin is saying there, that we're going through a really serious shock. And it probably doesn't make sense to say to public servants right now is the time to lay them off or to reduce their salaries. Because I think that will only inflict more misery on the economy at this point in time. What the government, of course, has to do is, while it's giving support via keeping more people employed or even providing employment opportunities, is to say, okay, I am now also going to try to reform this economy so that when we come out of this, we can also be in a place whereby the private sector has all of the incentives to do what we want them to do. To answer one of the points that the caller has just made there, where he's saying that the private sector is lethargic and they don't really do things. Well, investment in any country is almost certainly related to the incentives within that economy. And so you would find that private sector would do the type of investments that are able to give them the quickest returns in the quickest amount of time. And so right now it's a bit difficult to do some of the more innovative things that we want the private sector to do. And so that for me now has to be the priority of the government to ensure that they make it as easy as possible for private sector investment to take place in non-traditional areas. As it relates to banking, banks want to know that they lend their money and they can get it back. And if you have an economy that is growing, driven by private sector investment, sir, on the line here, you will find that the banks will start to lend to do a lot of these more innovative things that you're currently not seeing. But when you're in a situation where the economy is depressed, and perhaps over the last 10 years, even before this new government came into, the economy was not growing at all. In fact, it had shrunk. That's a really stark situation to tell banks to start to lend. They are not going to lend because ultimately, remember that they have a responsibility to the persons who have deposited their resources in those in those institutions to safeguard those resources, so that they're not going to lend to risky enterprise in a situation where the economy isn't growing. So the government really has, while it's giving support to the economy now, it has to also simultaneously put in place the other reforms so that we can get the type of growth going. I think many times in our discourse, we speak about the debt to GDP or the ratio of government expenditure. What I think we have to look at now is not necessarily trying to reduce the upper part of that formula, the debt, but we really need to start looking at the bottom bit, growing the GDP. So as a percentage of GDP, government's operations will start to shrink, we get private sector going, and I think that has to be the focus now. How can we get this economy growing? And the government really has to focus on improving the business environment. And as Kevin has said, the BRRRT program has all of those things in place. Unfortunately, COVID has come around and has put a stop to that. But the government now needs to sort of say, okay, I'm supporting the country on life support, but at the same time, I'm going to ensure that when this country is off life support, that it has every opportunity to become a world-class sprinter, as it were, in this race to be much more competitive.
All right, I want to thank both of you and thank the caller. Let's go. Let's keep it moving with this one. It says, what about all the errors the government is making that is compounding the impact of COVID? Nothing announced to diversify the economy away from tourism. No song, agriculture, or land use policy. And I just got information on that, by the way. What about they want to import 80,000 people when 50,000 are unemployed? No putting measures in place for the recovery to the private, so the private sector would lead, not protecting jobs, especially for the most needy. Now that's a mouthful. Let's start with you this time, Justin, and get your take on it. Remember, you're listening to Brass Tack Sunday. Go ahead, Justin.
Sorry, I could only repeat some of the things that I have said before. I can't speak in great detail about some of the, you know, I'm not going to answer what the caller said about it, whether the government has specific plans in place. Remember that this is a difficult point in time. We are dealing with an unprecedented situation here. And I think the government must be commended for dealing with the situation in the best way as possible. When you look at what's going on medically around the world with respect to the amount of active cases across many of our source markets, I think the government really has to be commended for managing that aspect of this. First of all, in this pandemic, the number one priority for the government is to safeguard the health of the population and to ensure that we don't have any excessive deaths, as it were. When you look at excess deaths in many countries around the world, you can see that we have had a significant increase this year. I think the government of Barbados has done a great job. Now, on the economy, of course, I agree that there are a number of things that have to be done here. And that's what we have been saying all along, is that while the government has the economy on life support, now it has to think about innovative ways to revive the economy. What are the new parts of growth? What's the vision as to where we want this economy to be by 2025, by 2030? And look, the government has also implemented some very innovative ideas. I mean, the one-year stamp for persons to come and live and work here is something that I think has been very innovative. And I think from what I've heard, the government has already processed a number of applications as it relates to that. Now, Do I agree that more has to be done? Of course, a lot more has to be done, and maybe the government has to communicate to the population a little bit better about what it plans to do and what the vision is. But like I said before, Corey, this is a situation where we cannot all, as persons who reside in Barbados, simply rely on the government to do everything. The government has done its part. We as citizens and we as residents of this place have our bit to do. Like I said before, we have to ensure that we take this opportunity to retool and upskill ourselves and look for the greater opportunities that are out there in this world now. Like I said before, you can sit in Barbados and provide a service to anywhere across the world, and you can as well now be a foreign exchange earner. You as an individual, you don't only have to depend on the government borrowing perhaps foreign exchange or perhaps larger organizations and companies for being the earners of foreign exchange. We as individuals have to see how we can do that as well. And this is where our advocacy now has to be, where we go and we have dialogue with government and say, you know what, I am an entrepreneur and it's difficult to do this. Can you perhaps make this easier for me to do? That, I think, that discourse has to happen. It has to happen where we feel as if we can go to the government and say, can you improve these processes by digitalizing it and making it easier for me to do business? Because I want to help get my country and my economy back to where I think it needs to be. So maybe there needs to be more dialogue and communication. But I think the government, in this first instance, it has a responsibility of protecting the health of residents of Barbados. And I think it has done a good job on that. Now is the time for us to get on with doing the other work that the government had started with the BRIT program, but now we need to put that, I think, on a turbocharge so that we can come out of this in a much stronger place than we were even before when we went into the pandemic.
Okay, great. As we approach the news, I'll try to put one or two messages in here as we go up to the news, things to think about as we return. We have a lot of talented persons here and in the region. One area that can generate a shock to our economy would be if we become eligible for the YouTube Partner Program. One thing I think we can offer to the world is online entertainment content, and YouTube would be an excellent vehicle for this. How can the government facilitate this to put us on the map? Now, I'm familiar with CEDA and so on. I think that this is a good idea. When I read this message, what came to my mind is the Fortune 500 companies, where they use a number of young talent in management to come with these innovative ideas, and then use the experienced, more learned folks to bring a balance and then move forward with implementation. This one says, hi to the panel. I must say, a very enlightening to the ear, but the practicality seems unsure in respect to moratoriums. Why does the credit union only giving 3 months to its members and some banks are not giving at all? That's one other thing to think about. Corey, I don't think the panelists can address this, but the Capital Works projects sound good and all, but when are they going to start? There seems to be a lag time. Why is this? And that's something I think Kevin may be able to answer when we come back. Are we seeking to reduce our implementation deficit? And that's in relation to the lag time. This one says, I've been finding it hard to find information for those who would like to start a business as a returning national. I have searched the government sites, I've sent emails, I've got no response. I would like to contribute to the economy by expanding my existing businesses there, but the lack of information is making this difficult. Are there any ideas or any resources that I should check? There's another question you can note down for after the news. This one says, good afternoon. What is the latest with government's marijuana industry initiative? Would this not be a great money earner, especially at this time, to get foreign exchange? And I hope that is not too high a question for you gentlemen. For when we come back to this Brass Tack Sunday with Dr. Justin Ram and Dr. Kevin Greenidge, your moderator Corey Lane, your producer Dennis Johnson, sponsored by Williams Industries Incorporated. For building supplies, big or small,
at Williams Metals, we have it all. Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipe, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Brass Tacks Sunday, where we're looking at the economy, where we are and where do we go from here with Dr. Justin Ram and Dr. Kevin Greenidge. I would have checked Dr. Justin Ram's name a number of times because people are online arguing with me that his name is Dr. Robinson, but he says his name is Dr. Justin Ram, so I go with that. I would have asked a number of questions as we headed to the news just now, and I just want to get the opportunity to start to work through some as we work our way back over to the news. We would have looked at where we are right now in terms of the Barbados economy and society, and we will be looking and taking more focus. And we also actually did a substantial look at where we're heading as well, I must admit. But to the questions, we spoke about the U2 partner program and innovation there. We looked at moratoriums. I don't know if any of the economists can speak to the banking industry, but some people are asking why only 3 months with the credit unions and why some banks are not doing it at all. And we plan to have a show on banking shortly, and we want to bring in the Barbados Bankers Association, etc. The one on the marijuana industry, I know that the commission was launched recently, headed by Chantel Monroe Knight. I saw that in the dailies just recently, so I know that they're still progressing on that. But the other questions that were being asked in terms of finding information on how to start a business for returning nationals and all the other questions, I can remind you guys, I'd like to get your take on it before we head back over to the telephone lines. So Dr. Ram or Dr. Greenidge, either of you can give some input on the questions that would have been asked pre-news. I see Kevin has his thing ready. So Kevin, anything from you?
Corey, yes. What I gathered, there was a question on the cannabis industry and what was happening there.
Mm-hmm,
so just a quick update. The cannabis legislation was already passed in Parliament. That's the legislation, and the regulations will be going to Cabinet in anticipating about 2 weeks' time. And then we laid in Parliament shortly thereafter. Mm-hmm. So they will give the industry a start by early. It's difficult to put timelines on this, you know, mm-hmm. because COVID would have disrupted the process. But this will give the industry a start early next year, as it is anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on that. On the question of if you have business ideas, et cetera, innovative ideas, this is the Ministry of Smart Business and Innovation. Technologically, I don't know if I got your name correctly, but I suggest persons get in touch with the ministry. They're definitely looking for new ideas and ways in which we can get things going and persons involved. So that's where I think persons should go. And if it's related to business, it's small, Ministry of Small Business, where there are a number of incentives also to help persons with their ideas and get started.
I think one of the problems, before we move on from there, one of the problems is getting in touch. And I've always made this point, I made it for years, in terms of the responsiveness of Barbados, not just government, private sector as well. The press that number, press this number, leave a message, no one calls. If you call, you feel like you're in Lotto or Santa visited you. And for me, I always like to take this opportunity to appeal to people at the other end of the line to return the call. I mean, sometimes people focus on the messenger and the criticism, but they miss the message. And the message is to take the call or return the call, because we need the investment and we need responsiveness in order to grow the economy and get the economy at the stellar position that the first WhatsApp would have asked us about. Just wanted to insert that. Go ahead, Mr. Dr. Greenidge.
No, I totally agree with you, Corey. Totally agree with you. The only other question I thought was a question on delays in project implementation. The truth is we're working as expeditiously as we can to get projects moving. But keep in mind that many of these projects were planned for later in the year and next year. I mean, if you're talking about rehabilitation of the roads program in the East Coast, there are a number of studies. And so it wasn't slated to start now. But what government has done is try to bring forward as much of those projects that are unrelated to tourism and get them going. But there was still, our best intents, they had a bit of time to get the necessary. Like some of them, you have to source the financing, et cetera. So it's not that they're being delayed. We're never technically literally facility for this period. But we're trying to get them going and get the Capital Works program. We've made the space in terms of the program, and getting those going is critical. So I do agree that this is something that we're going to have to focus on with great intents.
Let me flag something here in terms of capital projects, though. And that is that we've always had this reputation or this notion that is very hard, especially looking at town and country planning, etc. I remember that the late Prime Minister Arthur would have had, I can't remember if it was a subcommittee, a cabinet, but I know he had a special committee to try to move these projects along. Late David Thompson, Prime Minister Thompson had the same thing. The Frondelle administration, they had the same thing. I suspect that the Motley administration may have the same thing. Now, all these subcommittees of cabinet specifically looking at investment and capital projects, especially in the relation to the ease of doing business or the sloughiness of getting approvals, I don't know if we've seen on the right side of the equal sign anything that tells us that it moves a little faster and more efficient. Put simply, the projects just don't seem to be starting or get started. So I don't know if you have any information on the plan to actually get the capital works off of the ground. I know we break the ground and then the ground mends back and then there's no more after that. And I could name a number of projects. Yeah.